chair on the right.
They sit next to him.
Good afternoon. We're going to open the Senate Revenue Committee. Here's our order for the day. We will do Senate Bill 6 first. It has a referral to Ways and Means. We'll do House Bill 2379, where we'll consider one amendment. Then we will do House Bill 2671. If we can let Senator Harper's office know, that'll probably be about two. And then we'll round out the day with a simple bill that has been really easy to work, which is House Bill 2299. Open a work session on Senate Bill 6. Patty, do you want to talk about the one amendment that I think we'll consider for this bill?
I have an amendment
as well.
Oh, you do?
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Patricia O'Sullivan, Portland Public School District. I previously brought you a proposed amendment, -4, which actually put Portland Public School as well as other self-insured and trust school districts in Senate Bill 6. They had previously been excluded. In the -4 amendments, it inadvertently included community colleges in our amendment, and we didn't mean to do that. So I now brought you today the -6s, which leave community colleges as they were in the proposed bill and just include Portland Public Schools and other trust and insurance and self-insured school districts into the bill.
Thank you.
Sure.
More people standing than sitting, but that's questions for Ms. O'Sullivan. Thank you very much. Appreciate
sure.
it. Senator Starr, the -6 amendments.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Marshall, are you interested in coming and talking about these -6 amendments? The amendments that I authorized have drafted working with the Boards Association.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association. To the -6 amendments. The question has been raised, I think, about the effectiveness of PEB and whether or not the creation of a similar statewide pool for school district employees would provide any dollar or cost savings. I think it's safe to say that the level of savings is in dispute, and there's currently a survey being conducted of school districts by the Department of Education to try to get a handle on whether or not there are, if any, cost savings associated with the creation of a statewide pool. That data may not show what the proponents of creation of a statewide pool will assert, and that is the dollar savings are significant enough that we might want to proceed at this point in time with creating a new state agency. In the meantime, however, if there's a view that PEB and its statewide pool creates a significant lower cost for health insurance premiums, then we believe that pool and its cost ought to be set as a standard, and that school districts are free to take advantage of marketplace competition, seek out any place they want to purchase their health insurance, so long as it doesn't exceed the premiums that are charged by PEB to state employees. And the amendments also allow school districts, if they so choose, to purchase their health insurance from PEB if, given concurrent circumstances, they can provide or they can purchase those benefits at an equal or lesser cost. So that, in effect, Mr. Chair and members, are the effect of the amendments. And we think that after, if this bill were to pass, it will give us an opportunity over the next couple years to take a look and see exactly what kind of premiums the marketplace in the competitive environment is able to produce.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, in work session?
We are in work session, so we can move. I would like the -5s, and I think Senator Starr would like to move the -6.
I'll move the -6 amendments to Senate Bill 6.
Senator Starr has moved the -6 amendments to Senate Bill 6 discussion. Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, the -6 does bring Portland in. I think that's an important issue. If people believe the argument that aggregation is a good thing and a larger pool is the key to efficiency, then they certainly want to support putting Portland in the bill. Others have brought the argument about community colleges, keeping them out of the bill. I think that's an important feature. I share Senator Starr's questions about the efficiencies of this act because, as I described earlier, aggregation is a good thing unless you blow past the point of diminishing returns and your ability to do coverage. But as I told the chairman, I will help him procedurally move this bill forward to Ways and Means. I think it needs to get that discussion and some perhaps closer scrutiny on the potential benefits. And the way to do that is to put that in front of the Ways and Means fiscal analysis and have that tested over there. So I would support the Dash 6 amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kitchen, just for clarity, it's the Dash 5s that do the Portland. And Senator Starr, your amendments, Dash 6s.
Would include every school district in the state, so it would include Portland and everyone else.
Okay. Senator Inga.
Well, Mr. Chair, it looks like we're embarking on a debate between the Dash 6s and the Dash 5s, and the Dash 6s, I think, are really meant to substitute the basic purpose of the bill, which was to create the statewide pool. And so I think that's the decision for the committee is, do we want the statewide pool or don't we? And if the answer is that we do, then we need to vote no on the Dash 6s, and then we need to decide if we want to include Portland, then we'll vote yes on the Dash 5s. So I'm urging a no vote on the Dash 6s because I think we want to go with the Dash 5s and create the statewide pool.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. I think that the issue here is not whether we have a pool or not, but whether or not we save money or not. And it's clear to me from the testimony that we've received and the information that I've been given is that we don't know. We have no idea what kinds of potential cost savings there may or may not be in the pool. And I agree with Senator Ferrioli that, you know, sure it might be there might be some savings at some point with pooling, but we don't have any data. We don't have any except from data from the proponents saying, you know, from their assumptions. This is based on assumptions. I think the Dash 6 amendments clearly get us to a cost savings. And if that's the what you want to save money, you get there with the Dash 6s. With a pool, you don't know. And I'm certainly not comfortable sending this bill down to Ways and Means in its current form or with the Dash 5s or not. This is the committee where we're supposed to have those policy decisions made, discussed, and determined. You know, we certainly haven't been given enough information for us to make an informed decision on this whole idea of pooling or not pooling. I think the Dash 6s are a reasonable interim measure that we can take as a state legislature. You know, this whole pool idea is something that a legislature, I would think, would spend a lot more time on an interim discussion on really having a thorough discussion, not rush it through at the end of a legislative session when committees are shutting down and in a time of huge fiscal turmoil where we're grasping for straws and hoping and maybe praying that there's going to be some savings here so we can bolster these budgets and get out of Dodge. For that reason, I think the Dash 6s are the reasonable alternative to the bill as it was originally drafted for including Portland or not including Portland.
Thank you. Senator Ringa.
Well, just a comment. We had the analysis that Senate Bill 6 would save $42 million. OSBA came and testified and said, well, no, we don't think it's $42 million. It's probably more like $23 million. So then the debate was, well, gee, either way, it's a lot of money on the table that we're going to save. And that's under the basic version of the bill, which is maintained in the Dash 5s. Now, OSBA is coming and presenting their Dash 6s, and you know, underlying the debate is the fact that they get their $2 million royalty payment. And it's not something that they preferred to mention, but it was certainly an important issue to talk about. And I think that whether the savings is $42 million, whether it's $23 million, it's a lot of money, and we need to move forward with the concept of the of Senate Bill 6.
Thank you. Tara, the vote is on the Dash 6 amendment. Senator Starr has moved to Senate Bill 6.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Cannon?
No.
Ringo?
No.
Starr?
Yes.
Ferrioli?
Aye.
Becker?
Is a no. Motion fails.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I move the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 6.
Senator Ringo has moved the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 6. Discussion. Tara, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Cannon?
No.
Ringo?
Aye.
Starr?
No.
Ferrioli?
Aye.
Becker?
Is an aye. Motion carries. Senator Ringo.
Mr. Chair, I move that this committee pass Senate Bill 6 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ringo has moved Senate Bill 6 as amendment to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannan.
I'm going to be voting no again. I think any remaining myth about local control will disappear with the passage should this bill pass. I've always been a firm believer if it's not broke, don't fix it. And it's interesting that I'm asked often by people to describe how legislators come to determine how a bill is made. And I use the analogy that it's like a bunch of cooks in the kitchen that don't know what they're trying to make. And I think this is a prime example of somebody trying to make something that you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And for that reason, I'll be voting no.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the I think the issue of the Dash 6 amendments having been decided leaves us with the potential of the bill as it was drafted or with the Dash 5s. And I think adding the Portland area into the pool, I think, is a necessary thing. I am as skeptical, I believe, as Senator Hannan is, certainly as Senator Starr is, about the efficacy of this action that we're about to take today. But I believe that the chairman of this committee wants to move this process forward. I believe moving this bill in the chairman's preferred vision or version down to the Ways and Means process is a courtesy vote to the chairman to move the process forward. I received similar votes from this committee on issues that were important to me, so I would like to help move this process forward, but not without expressing very grave concerns about what I think are possibly far overstated potential savings here. And I hope in the Ways and Means process we get some better analysis on the issue of diminishing returns and the possibility of overextending the concept of savings simply through the issue of bigness. So, you know, I'm going to be asking folks in Ways and Means to consider carefully whether bigger is better in this case. I watched a couple of HMOs collapse in Eastern Oregon on the same theory. And I know PEB has a pretty good record, but we could say that about PERS right up until about 3 years ago. So I'm just real concerned about this issue, but I'm willing to move it forward as a courtesy to the chairman.
I appreciate that. Senator Corcoran.
Well, Mr. Chair, I actually think that there will be an economy of scale. Having watched the creation of PEB from SEB and BUB, and acronyms from hell, but in fact, PEB does a very good job, and I believe that, especially when you think about some of these small school districts, rural school districts, I think that they will ultimately benefit. I've negotiated contracts in small places like Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, and you would have thought that they were in a pool, Blue Cross Blue Shield pool with a bunch of choker setters. I mean, their rates were so high. So I really think that that we'll see ultimately that there'll be some economies of scale with this.
Thank you. Just for the committees, I do not know if this gets out of Ways and Means. We have a companion bill in the House that I think is going to go right down to Ways and Means, and I think it's an interesting discussion. We've had a committee that has worked on this for, 4 or 5 months that has met every 2 weeks, led by Senator Morgan, and I think it'll be an interesting discussion. And for those who had other amendments to this bill, I would encourage you to take them down with you to Ways and Means. That would be the place to do further amending of the bill. Senator Starr.
Well, I appreciate that if you have further amendments taken to Ways and Means, but yet the policies or policy choices are supposed to be made here in the Policy Committee opposed to the Ways and Means Committee. And I think that we've spent as a policy far too little committee time. Sure, there's been a committee or group that's worked. I haven't been involved in any of that. Nobody has brought this to me except in front of us in this committee. And the policy decisions ought to be made here before you send a bill down to Ways and Means and, you know, encourage folks to go down there and work the work the policy angles and the Ways and Means Committee. I'm very concerned about the direction that this bill is heading us, and the lack of time this committee has spent working on this issue, trying to really drill down on the numbers. I think we have a lot of assumptions that are underlying this bill. Really concerned about the makeup of the board and the power of the board. I'm concerned about the ability of local districts. We had testimony from at least one insurance company that has had successfully held costs down in school districts. They're going to be cut out of that opportunity. I think we're going to hurt our smaller communities. I think we're going to hurt small insurance folks and providers in some of the rural parts of this community of our state. We've spent far too little time working on this issue, and I'm just sad. I think it's a sad state when we're rushing through policy of this importance. This is a big deal, and we're rushing it through. This is our second meeting on this issue. And we're all in a big hurry to get out of here, and hopefully we can save some money in the process. And I think we're leaving things undone. And I can't be even any more emphatic that I think this is the wrong way to go about making policy. And if I could vote no twice, I would, but I guess I can only vote no once. Anyway.
Thank you. Further? Tara, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Cannon?
No.
Daniels?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Ray Allen?
Aye.
Becker?
Is an aye. Bill goes to Ways and Means. Open up a work session on House Bill 2379. And Senator Carter. Oh, there you are.
I hope she doesn't set anything off.
I did take my bath, and everybody's leaving, Mr. Chairman.
More will come in. Good afternoon.
Chairman, thank you. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Margaret Carter from Senate District 22, and I'd like for Representative Kefauri staff to join me here. Representative Kefauri and I did this bill as take-home measures to be able to deal with the 98% occupancy rate of housing in North-Northeast Portland. There, we don't hardly have space to for people to live in North-Northeast Portland. So this bill has three features that is going to be able to help low-income residents to hopefully get housing in North-Northeast Portland. One of the issues here, besides just being a bill for low-income housing, is that this bill also would allow the BOLI to conform to federal law and also qualify for HUD support to be able to pay for low-income housing. And there's a fair housing amendment that would be helpful to the Oregon Law Project, which will protect people from negative impacts of neutral housing policy. And, Mr. Chairman, in looking at these three issues, they are very, very vital for our community and for Portland metropolitan area, because it brings low-income housing facilitate more low-income housing in North-Northeast Portland. And this bill has been with you for a long time, Mr. Chairman, and I would appreciate very much if you guys can help us to get this bill out so that we can get busy on these low-income housing needs in the area. And I would like for it to be done with no amendments added, because I wouldn't like to see extra baggage associated with it. And so I do know that you have some proposed amendments here today, and I'd like for you to pass this bill out without amendments. And I'd appreciate your support very, very much.
Thank you very much. Questions are for Senator Carter.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
Now, what are the Dash 9 amendments?
The
Do you want the Dash 9 Amendment?
Can I ask David to come and to explain the Dash 9 Amendment?
Neibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Carter. I'm David Neibel from the Oregon Law Center. The Dash 9 amendments are incorporated in the in what Senator Carter described as the bill. The original bill has the single-family occupancy in distressed areas. The Dash 9 amendments are the amendments that incorporate the Bureau of Labor and Industry's fair housing amendments and the amendments that Senator Carter described about facially neutral housing policies. You've seen, actually, I think that the Dash 9 amendments are technical amendments to what you passed out. They're almost exactly the same as what you passed out in the B engrossed version. The bill had to be taken back into committee because there was a technical drafting error, and then there's some conflict amendments involved in the B9 amendments too. But I believe Senator Carter, if I can paraphrase, the Dash 9 amendments are the amendments that the proponents of the bill and the B engrossed bill would ask you to adopt.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Bazin.
May I add, the bill cannot pass without some version of the conflict amendment, which is included in the B9.
Mr. Chairman, I can't hear what
Mazin just said. We pulled this back. We actually passed this out, the committee will remember, a month ago. We pulled it back because we needed these conflicts, the B9s. So we passed the bill out. We pulled it back to get – we had to do some sort of conflict amendment, and that is what's before you in the B9s.
And the B9s, that's right.
To clarify.
And my request to you, that Mr. Chairman, was that the B10s would not be added.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions or comments?
See you on the beeper show.
I don't think he's going to stop with that.
I don't think he's
for at least a week.
I think I have a new title.
Beep, beep. That's your new title, Senator Beep, Beep.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
I think you're good. Thank you.
So we need a motion on the
D9s? Yeah, we are. Let's bring up, if Mr. Huntington, if you alone could come up on the B10s and introduce us to those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt speaking in support of the B10s. With me, seated behind me, is Dorothy English. The B10s incorporate essentially what is Section 4 of House Bill 3631A, and the provisions of the bill take care of essentially a 30-year battle for Mrs. English, a 91-year-old widow who has owned a piece of property in Multnomah County for since 1953. And over the years has purchased the property for her retirement, she and her husband invested their entire life savings into this piece of property, built the house as they had the money. They've never had a mortgage on the property. Built the house and have lived there for quite some time with the idea that they would use, that they would sell that property or portions of that property as they needed for their retirement. Of course, as we know, times have changed, and she is at the point now where Multnomah County simply refuses to allow her to do anything with the property. In fact, Policy 4 of Multnomah County's West Hill Rural Area Plan, we typically get asked why we're in front of you as opposed to Multnomah County. Policy 4 of the Rural Area Plan is just a flat-out prohibition on her doing anything, so there's no place left for us to go. It's a state statute that essentially would eliminate her ability to divide her parcel, so that's why we are here as opposed to trying to take care of our problem at the local level. Dorothy has tried to do that. She and her husband have spent thousands of dollars, have fought for years for this, essentially for the basic rights that they had. She now lives on about $600 a month, which is her Social Security income. That's all she has. She has lost everything as a result of her inability to use her property, and so. since she's 91 years old, she doesn't have a whole lot of time to wait. We're trying to get her to restore some of the basic, some of her rights back. It's a modest proposal that would allow her, the way the bill is described, the amendments are described, it would apply probably only to her. It would allow her to divide her property, generate a little bit of revenue from that property so that she could live comfortably in the remaining years that she has left. Again, I apologize for having to bring a specific land use bill to the legislature as opposed to the county, but we have nowhere. There's nowhere left for us to turn, I consider Dorothy to be, regardless of what you think of ballot measure 7, Dorothy English is the poster child for ballot measure 7, and there are just some situations where you have people who have been treated unfairly. That whose problems need to be solved. So we believe it's a matter of equity and fairness, and we would hope that the B-10 amendments get incorporated into this bill. We obviously, the B-10 amendments are not a gut and stuff. They're just simply an addition to the existing bill, and so we think it makes it a better bill and would certainly do everything in our power to help move the legislation along, both on the Senate side and on the House side, with the B-10 amendments.
Thank you.
And I've got my chair if the committee is so inclined.
Questions? Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to Dorothy English. She's a constituent of mine. I visited her property a month or two ago, and I think there is a legitimate question raised as to whether she has been treated unfairly and whether there ought to be some consideration for that. I would note that currently there's a bill pending in Rules Committee that would deal with this exact same issue, and perhaps there's still room for it to be resolved over there in at least some fashion. I would also note that this raises questions as to the governor's letter saying that he would veto any bills that would be a superseding of a land use dispute. And I would question whether this amendment would draw a veto from the governor. And so one question for Mr. Honeycutt is whether he's asked the governor's office that question.
Jared Deckert, Senator Ringo, we have Ross Day, our director of legal affairs, has contacted the governor's office, I believe, on 7 different occasions and has not received a response back from the governor's office. We're doing our due diligence. We've tried multiple times to schedule meetings with the proponents of the bill, with the governor's office, and we've been rebuffed at every turn. So,
Mr. Chair. Senator Ringo.
Obviously, when you do superseding to resolve a land use dispute, that raises certain policy questions. And I would just note, I am sympathetic to Ms. English's situation. I think there are possibilities that it will still be resolved this legislative session. But I certainly don't think that adding it to a bill intended to promote affordable housing is the right way to go.
Jared Deckert, Senator Ringo, as far as the superseding, I would point out, I believe the governor's letter was that we don't want to, I believe the governor's letter on the North Plains bill was that, having read that letter, was that we don't want to interfere with an ongoing process. As I indicated, under the Multnomah County's comprehensive plan, there is no process left. There's nothing that she can do. There's an 80-acre minimum parcel size in state statute in a forest zone. Since Multnomah County won't allow her to rezone her property, which, by the way, is three quarters of a mile from the city, from the Portland city limits. Senator Ringo has been there. This is the body in which we have to come. So we don't think that this would apply. If the governor's office would return our calls, we'd certainly find out. But we don't think that the governor's veto or the threatened veto letter on the North Plains bill applies here because we don't have any process. We don't have anywhere to turn.
Senator Hannah.
If Mr. Honeycutt, is the North Plains issue still in court?
Chair Deckert, Senator Hannah, yes.
And this issue is not in court?
Chair Deckert, Senator Hannon, we can't even get to court because the county's policies are under the county's comprehensive plan. We can't get the property rezoned. There'd be absolutely no way to do it.
When this bill was up before us before, didn't we indicate to you and others involved that they should go forth and negotiate some reasonable compromise on some legislation and then bring it back? Didn't we indicate to the city of Portland that they should work with your group?
Chair Decker, Senator Hannon, these particular amendments haven't been in front of this committee. We have attempted on the House side to negotiate something, but it's entirely unsuccessful. The House Bill 3661, as Senator Ringo mentioned, was passed on the House side and is sitting in the Senate Rules Committee. However, being quite candid, we have worked that bill for, well, ever since it's been over on the Senate Rules, ever since it's been in committee, and are having a hard, we've got 15 votes and are having a hard time finding a 16th vote. We get a lot of comments about being sympathetic with the situation, but when you're 91 years old, being sympathetic doesn't help you with your retirement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Dave, what I'd like to do is, and I think there's a deal to be had here. I mean, in talking to Senator Ringo, it seemed like there's a deal to be had. I certainly wouldn't want, and it would be my position not to attach this language to 2379, jeopardizing that bill. But I do believe, and I have not been directly involved in this issue, but I'd be happy to work with yourself and folks on the Senate Rules Committee. And if Senator Corcoran was here, he sits on Rules. I think there could be a deal to be had, and that would be my preferable way to go, is to keep it as standalone issues. If Senator Corcoran is here, it would be nice to hear from him, because he does sit on Rules, and could be that 4th and 16th vote, if that's what you're looking for.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that'd be, if I might.
Please.
It seems like there'd be no reason to amend this bill if the bill that was stuck in Rules was moving forward.
I think Dave's, I won't speak for him, his concern is it's not moving forward.
That's why we have this amendment.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, Senator Hammond.
I think we heard similar concerns expressed on another land use bill that was on the floor of the Senate earlier this week, as a matter of fact, yesterday, about how much we want to compromise and how much we want to help. And I sensed that it was locked up 15-15, and now Mr. Honeycutt is saying this other bill that's in Rules Committee is locked up 15-15. So why should we believe you that you're willing to work for it when it's locked up 15-15? It doesn't say stupid across here.
My understanding is that, and Senator Ringo, you can chime in. You've said you've been directly involved, that there is room for compromise.
Well, frankly, I don't think it's that simple. I mean, I think a lot of people are concerned that once you start creating specific exceptions to the land use system, that it's never going to end. Everybody's going to come asking for their special reason. I am somewhat persuaded this woman bought her home in 1953, and that was well before a land use system was in place. And so I think that is a special issue. But I think there are legitimate concerns that dictate we just don't jump in and agree to do this.
Thank you. Thanks, Honeycutt. Appreciate it. So we're in work session. It's up to the committee what you want to do.
No, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the dash B10 amendments.
Okay. Senator Farioli has moved the dash B10 amendments. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, if there were assurances that the bill that was trapped in Rules could move, there'd be no reason to add this amendment.
Mm-hmm. I think what we should do, I think my preference would be we can take a vote on the B-10s or just pull them together.
If you want to hold this up over for a day or two, I'll withdraw my motion.
I think that's what I prefer.
I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter, is that, and Representative Kifori is...
Ryan, no, just move it. This is black.
Well, I think I'd like to hold, so...
My motion is withdrawn, Mr.
Okay. Is that...
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I hated to have to weigh into this, but I'll tell you, you know, the standalone bill is not going to go anywhere in rules because there's no compromise on it. So I really think we ought to move the bill.
Just because they're hyper persistent doesn't mean they have this leg to stand on.
I think that's my preference is to hold the two bills. So we'll close a work session on that and open a work session on House Bill 2671. Mazin, this is a fun day in Senate Revenue. Reacquaint us with House Bill 2671.
Mr. Chair, it's never a dull day in Senate Revenue, that's for sure. 2671
okay.
Is House Bill passed the House, and what it does, Mr. Chair, is primarily opens a fifth criteria for the long-term enterprise zones. The long-term enterprise zones are the zones that get 15 years of property tax exemptions, and then also eligible to petition the governor's office for income tax exemptions. 2671 takes the fifth criteria to be more concentrated on the capital side rather than the employment side. It allows a firm that spends $200 million in investment to do only 10 full-time employees if it's in geographically area, and that's different from the other four criteria that exist for this long-term investment or long-term enterprise zone. The we've heard the bill before. The investment it seems to be the assumption that I made in revenue impact that the building of the investment would probably occur at any rate with property taxes that would be on that level of $350 million, although the assumption that we've heard before will be testimony for a lot higher level of investment to be about between $150,000 and $315,000 a year of negative impact for local governments. However, there are certain agreements that are worked out with local governments on in some sort of an in-lieu payment of taxes, especially with this. Now, the dash A3 is an amendment that deals with an issue of a similar magnitude, and it takes away for enterprise zones, it takes away the property taxes requirements and allows we turn to in lieu of taxes, and it puts the amount of payments or the number of payments for the in lieu of taxes over a 3-year period, and it allows for the division of those taxes to be in the same manner that the taxes would have been divided between the different jurisdictions. This seems to have an agreement between the different parties that we're discussing also in House Bill 2299, which we'll be hearing later, on centrally assessed properties or utilities. And as I hear from the different parties, it's an agreement that has been shared by Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, the bill before us, 2671, happens to have the right relating clause.
for the implementation of an agreement that was struck between one of the counties and a couple of energy companies relative to a payment in lieu of taxes agreement, not only to create the payment in lieu of authority, but also to agree to a deferred payment schedule. The effect of that consideration in Senate Bill 2299 has driven us to look for the appropriate vehicle with the right relating clause to implement the agreement, which has to be relating to taxation, Mr. Chairman, which this bill has the right relating clause. The proponents and the parties to the agreement are here in the room, but they all indicate that they agree to the fact that there ought to be a mechanism to implement the agreement, and it is reflected in the A3 amendment to this bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask the committee to consider adopting the A3 amendments because that will, in fact, provide the mechanism to implement the compromise between Avista and Morrow County. And, Mr. Chairman, I have checked with Senator Harper and Representative Garrard, who are sponsors of this original bill, and have their permission to add the modification.
Add this on.
Yes.
And do you want to bring up the parties, or are we?
We can have them stand and nod. We can have them come up and testify. It's at your option, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to have them come up because I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Please, yeah. If representatives of Avista and Umatilla County might come on up, and you're free to come up. Please come on up. I haven't met you yet. Oh, he's on the original. We're going to get to the original. I think you're in good shape, actually.
You just sit and relax.
I think you're gonna like the outcome. Yeah. Others, Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the issue that was before us in 2299 that intersects was the idea that we have an assessment that cannot be waived by the taxing authority without specific statutory authority to do that. We have a negotiated agreement between the parties to reduce the assessment. We now need to create the statutory authority that will allow a payment in lieu of taxes so that may be agreed to, plus a deferral schedule. And, Mr. Chairman, there are 13 special districts or taxing districts in the county. There are 3 bond levies. So in order to make the adjustments that are necessary, we need an agreement to create the authority for payment in lieu of taxes, and that is what the A3 amendment does. And I guess I'd just like the folks that are here assembled today to indicate that that this is their amendment and they're requesting us to put it in the bill.
Thank you. For the record.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, I'm Ray Grace, Morrow County Commissioner. I'm here at the behest of the Morrow County Court. We have reached a working agreement with Avista, and we believe that this amendment takes care of everything that we need to put it into place.
Thank you.
Chair Deckard, Greg Sweek, Morrow County Assessor. The details of this bill mesh with what was discussed earlier with Avista and with Senator Farrelly at a later time, so it gives some flexibility as to how the final numbers are going to shake out. We know the large number. We're just not sure whether it's going to be an installment payment or not. This makes that permissive.
But the A3s reflect the agreement.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Anderson, Avista Corporation. I'd like to thank the county, first of all, for sitting down with us immediately after this committee convened last time, and the chair directed us to try to get together and work out some agreement, which we were able to do. I was not party to that. People came from Spokane and from there was one person on site at Morrow County that did the deal for Avista. We are more than happy to work with the county. I wish we could have worked this out earlier before it came before you to get direction, but we are in agreement with it, and we look forward to working with the county in the future.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, there was some small savings for Avista. There were some accommodations made by the county. There were some accommodations made by Avista. The best part of this agreement, Mr. Chairman, is that it preserves the working partnership between the county and the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they have a great future together. So mm-hmm. thank you, Mr. Chairman, for indulging the process and letting the process work.
Well, I'm very appreciative, actually, Senator Farrelly, of brokering and the two parties coming together in, gosh, 10 days. Which is pretty remarkable. So I thank Senator Farrelly and the two parties.
Senator yes, sir. Now, the initial issue that was involved when all three of you testified before dealt with work in progress or construction in progress. Is that included in this agreement, or is that dealt with somewhere else?
Chair Deckard, Senator Hannon, that is actually in House Bill 2299. This implements our agreement, and the only way we can go this route is if we get an amendment to House Bill 2299 when that comes up.
So you have an amendment for that that will help in the work in progress?
That's correct.
Okay, that will help Avista in the future?
Well, it actually removes the language to construction in progress, and that allows...
I thought we needed to keep it.
No, it actually would have to be removed for this amendment to House Bill 2671 to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe I can help unstrand this. 34C is what this gentleman is referring to, and they want that removed from 2299. Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment that the good senator from Ashland is referring to is an amendment that will be offered to take work in progress out of the realm of taxation in Oregon. And that I think that will be brought by a different party on 2299.
Is that the amendment that Avista has?
I believe they're offering an amendment that would take centrally assessed properties out of the work in progress world, which I think we're one of the two states that currently offer an assessment for work in progress on centrally assessed utilities and other companies.
And then that will resolve everybody's conflict.
Well, actually, there are two different issues. That's 34C. Is the issue that created an exemption that would allow companies to take a double exemption, one for the enterprise zone and one for the incentive that is in a different program. So we wanted to take that out of that bill. But the issue that you're referring to is one that we started to talk about. It's a problem for centrally assessed utilities in Oregon. It's a disincentive to bringing people there. So we should deal with that in 2299.
Okay.
I hope I was able to help, Mr. Chairman.
I think that was
really. No, I'm still confused, but I'll wait for the next bill.
That's good to know which bills you're confused about.
Right. Mr. Chairman, are we in work session?
We are. So this, the amendment on this one, it does get a little confusing on because this, the way this, you guys are free. Thank you very much, and thank you for your diligence on this. The way that this came about on 2671 is it's just the relating clause.
Exactly. Right deal, wrong relating clause in 2299.
And problem it doesn't impact the regular bill that was there before.
Yeah, the bill underlying is something that is absolutely critically important to Klamath Falls or Klamath Basin.
Because
that does not interfere with that underlying bill.
It doesn't affect the people's energy project in Klamath Falls.
No. As a matter of fact, Senator Harper was supposed to be here. We have representatives here.
And I do have notes from both Harper and Girard indicating that they're okay with the amendment.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
We aren't.
So was People's Power, Mr. Chair, were they told that they had to add that 18-hole golf course there in the one in Klamath Falls? Did that amendment come in?
That made the bill. That's
all right.
Correct.
We wanted to make the guy a little nervous.
I think calling him up and sitting him down twice has made him a little nervous already. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A3 amendments to 2671.
Senator Farrelly has moved the -A3 amendments to House Bill 2671. Further discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, with the potential hazard of dragging this poor gentleman up before the committee, I'd like to move the House Bill 2671 as amended to the floor of the DuPass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved House Bill 2671 as amended to the floor with the DuPass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Farrelly.
I will be happy to carry, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Two down, one on the shelf, and open a work session on House Bill 2299. Are you doing this, Bill? What's the best one we can do? Let's have him. Is it Michael?
Mr. Burton.
Mr. Burton, can you come up? We have a number of amendments and at least familiarize the committee with all the amendments before us, and then we'll let each one make their case.
Chair Deckard, at your pleasure and members of the committee, I'll take a look at the amendments. None of them are from us. So which ones do we want to start with? Because you heard some of them last time.
From number one.
No,
started,
let's not do that. Chair Deckard, members of the committee, some of the amendments are address the same issue, and I'm not sure if the same sponsors are. I mean, they actually were suggested by the same sponsors, and I'm not sure that it makes sense to cover all of them.
Let's start with. Did you participate in the drafting of the Dash 18s?
Chair Deckard, we did, and I'd be happy to explain that one. I know about that one.
Thanks.
As you may be aware, there has been some discussion for some time, and there was actually a testimony last time about an interest in creating trading off a property tax incentive for some sort of shot by Oregon workers for. First, my name is Mike Burton. For the record, I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department. But there's been some interest in trading off a benefit for Oregon workers for that incentive. And there was some discussion about how we might go about this. This amendment points out that for the Enterprise Zone program, I mentioned that there's the potential to negotiate a fourth or fifth year of an exemption. This amendment just highlights the fact that fourth or fifth year comes at the cost of paying good wages on the permanent jobs created by the facility, 150% of average county wages, and any other agreement that the zone sponsor may reasonably enter into with the project proponent or the company building the project. This one just highlights the fact that that could include a prevailing wage condition. So it's not requiring one. It's an option with
those fourth and fifth years.
It's an option with both the company and the zone sponsor that there even be a discussion about a fourth and fifth year. Both of them have to agree to it. And this is just pointing out that if the business so desires, it can agree to pay prevailing wages and along with 150% of county average wages on a long-term basis once it gets the facility in operation, it can open the door for a discussion about the fourth or fifth year. We do not see this as being a business climate issue.
Thank you. And have you been involved with the Dash 19s, 20s, 21s?
Mr. Chairman, the Dash 20s are a conflict resolution amendments by Legislative Council. If the bill to move, it has to have the B-20 before they move to resolve a conflict. That's where the B-20s go.
Okay.
And what are the 21s, too, Mr. Chairman, if I might ask?
21s allow you to consume alcohol when you...
revenue bills.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I think I can answer Senator Farrelly's question about the 21s. The 21s apply only to the strategic investment program part of the bill, and it would allow not just counties to work with OECD on that, but also cities with population greater than 60,000. So it defines municipality as a city with a population of 60,000 or more, or a county. So it would allow the larger cities in the state to work with OECD on this SIP program.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay. Senator Hammond.
How many cities would that apply to?
Six or seven.
Who's the sponsor of this amendment?
I had it drafted, Mr. Chair.
Okay. This is the first time. Okay, so we'll revisit the 21s in a moment. I think you're good, Mr. Burton, unless you care to comment on any of the...
Chair Deckert, you haven't discussed the the B-19, which is the one I think Senator Ferrioli was referring to in the last hearing. And as I read this, it removes a couple of specific conditions related to the Avista project that were in 2299, which are sections 34, D, and E. It leaves the construction in progress exemption in this bill.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might inquire further on B-19.
Yes.
It would remove Section 34, B, and C. Is that correct?
Chair Deckard, Senator Ferrioli, B and E, 34, D and E, 34, B and C, by my reading, remain in the bill.
Okay, and who was the sponsor of B-19? Who brought that amendment? Do we know?
The B-19?
Yes.
Avista.
Okay. And how does that affect the agreement between Avista and the county?
Chair
or
Deckard,
is it perspective?
Chair Deckard, Senator Ferrioli, without the construction in progress exemption in the bill, the company has to pay the entire tax for the year in question, the year in which they were not yet in operation.
Notwithstanding the payment in lieu of taxes agreement? So we just created the authority for a payment in lieu of taxes agreement.
Chair Deckard, Senator Ferrioli, I didn't read that exempted them from other taxes. I'm not sure. I haven't been at the table while this discussion was going on, but we believe that this... this piece is required in order for the payment deal that was contained in the other bill. I'm just based on a cursory reading of that complicated language in that other bill, it looks like this is necessary for that deal to go forward.
I'm seeing a nod from the folks from Avista. Am I seeing a nod from the folks from Oral County as well? The nod is the opposite direction from Oral.
So let's take these just in order. We'll deal with them one at a time. Let's go with the 18s first, since that's what we started. Can the proponents, Mr. Shiprack, and if you want to bring one other with you, and then the opponents will have a chance on the dash 18s if you want to find two to come up after Mr. Shiprack and talk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Shiprack, Executive Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council. I've been busy trying to find a compromise on this issue in the last hearing. I call this prevailing wage light. I think Mr. Burton did an excellent job explaining it. It's permissive. It allows county commissioners or city councils who wish to put local prevailing wage requirements in there as an incentive to owners who want to build in Oregon. We expect many owners to, in fact, seize upon this as a way to get a fourth and fifth year exemption. I've had conversations with a number of county commissioners who had thought that this was what was going to happen, and in fact, it didn't happen, and it was lately exacerbated by a situation in Clatsop County. It's happened before. This is the incentive. This is the carrot. It is permissive. If an owner doesn't want to use it, that's up to them. But we thought we'd try and do something that will help the local construction workforce who, for whatever reason, was entirely cut out of the original enterprise zone law. And we're taxpayers, too. We live in these communities, and we'd like those jobs, and we'd like our county elected local officials to have the ability and the incentive to bargain with owners, negotiate with them, if you will, to try and get this type of language in there so that local contractors and workers can get the jobs that their property taxes are helping to create. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Shiprack? What do you think about the idea of a sixth and seventh year, as opposed to years three and or four and five as the carrots? You keep the existing system with a 5 year, with the the current year four and five. Yeah, if you get it, you have to meet these requirements, but then you tag on two more.
Mr. Chairman, that was never brought up. This kind of pigtails onto the existing 150% requirement for the permanent employees at the plant. So I've never discussed that. I have no idea where local government would be at on that.
It's not drafted now, so they'd have time.
It's a long time to defer property. And, as I mentioned in the prior hearing, these property tax abatements are sizable. There's a lot of money here, and I don't know, to stretch it out even further.
Chair Deckard, if I might take a stab at that question.
Sure.
The fourth and fifth year, and if there were to be a sixth and seventh year, are negotiable. That they are agreed upon by the zone sponsors and by the company. So if the local jurisdictions have an issue with it, and they may generally have an issue with it, but if they have a specific issue related to a specific project, they don't have to enter into an agreement.
So they could do that. They could do what Mr. Shiprack's asking for in this amendment. They could do it currently. I mean, they could enter into a prevailing wage agreement.
Chair Decker, for a fourth and fifth year, they can currently do this.
Mm-hmm. You want it in statute, Mr. Shiprack.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'll explain why. And I think Mike said it the best way. It's to highlight the fact that this is it's a tool that would be on the table to a local government group so that they would see in statute that this is an option that they may want to pursue, because the handshake agreements don't seem to work, and we wanted to highlight that let's put this into the agreement if they can negotiate that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not landmark legislation. I'm not pretending it is. Mm-hmm. But it's just something to signal. One of the things that I've found, Mr. Chairman, is like county council and city council, the attorneys that work for local governments are extremely conservative when it comes to the statutes. Even when we feel it's perfectly legal, they'll oftentimes say, well, it doesn't say that. And so that was the other reason we wanted to just say it.
Just to have it as a stipulation. But this isn't, we discussed earlier, it's an and, not an or. It is, and you do prevailing wage. Is that correct?
Chair Decker, the 150% remains required. There's no way around that.
Right.
To get a fourth and fifth year, your long-term employment has to be at 150% of average county wages. This part would be an additional option.
Mm-hmm.
Because there may be another agreement.
Option.
It doesn't have to be.
I guess Bob would say the key word be an option there.
Right. Great. They don't have to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Are we in a work session? You want to take each one of these?
I do, but I want to let the opponents have a chance to weigh in before we move the amendments. If two of the opponents, whoever y'all designate as the opponents, greetings.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I represent the Associated Builders and Contractors and the Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon. We're in opposition to the B-18 amendment. I know there's four different amendments drafted on the prevailing wage that would currently apply then to private projects. On want to reference page 25 of the particular bill and the amendment itself. It does require, when they do negotiate, you did hear from the department that the 150% of county average wage would be a requirement to get the additional 2 years of exemption. The second option was an open negotiable that they may request other additional. If you read the amendment, it says included but not limited to, and then the prevailing wage requirement in the statute. And so therefore, what you're requiring them to do is to at least look at that and include this in their negotiated agreement and not limit it to other things that they might want to have. And so although you've heard from the previous folks testifying in favor of this amendment that it is optional, by putting it in statute in this form, we feel that it is a more or less you're telling them that they must negotiate this as one of the terms of the agreement. Our opinion, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that by doing that, you could be trading the long-term jobs of that particular project for those short-term. Because if that is in fact a requirement and they're going to negotiate that, the prior testimony you've heard in your committee, Mr. Chair, was that it's no longer an incentive to move into these enterprise zones. And so, therefore, the current language where it does leave the county the ability to negotiate those kind of issues, hiring issues, wage issues, we would like to keep that open and negotiable. And we believe the current statute does allow them to do that. However, by putting in the statute, we feel it shifts shifts away, and I think you're going to see the same effect from the testimony from your last hearing that that you'll see that happen within this enterprise zone. I do want to also state, Mr. Chair, that on the amendment lines 11 and 12 of the bill, where it says this, the sponsor is responsible for establishing and implementing the procedures and criteria for verification and compliance of the firm. Compliance of prevailing wage, Mr. Chair, under public contracting law, is done through the Bureau of Labor and Industries. It's a funded, obviously, state agency to verify certified payroll. Again, Mr. Chair, the history of prevailing wage has been on public projects only. And therefore, when you do a project, you do submit certified payroll. The Bureau of Labor and Industries verifies that you are complying with prevailing wage law. This particular amendment actually turns the process and verification compliance over to each sponsor, which is the counties. I've never seen a county or any of the sponsors put together like the Bureau of Labor and Industries with those with that very. Mission is to verify these prevailing wage law. Now, I did ask the question to the sponsors of the bill if they were going to use the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and that's why they put this in there, because they weren't. They were going to give that responsibility over to the counties. They're not in the business of verifying prevailing wage law like the Bureau of Labor and Industries. So, therefore, I think that it's an unfunded mandate on those particular lines, that mandating them to do something that I don't think they have the capabilities of doing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I was with you right up to unfunded mandate. I don't see how it could be an unfunded mandate if it's negotiated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I just believe that the compliance portion is, I'm just referencing lines 11 and 12. I do believe, Senator Corcoran, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that those items can still be negotiated as part of the agreement. However, mandating it into part of the provisions, we would oppose that.
But it's not mandating, it's permissive.
Again, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think by the way the language is worded in here, I think that's permissive or not. I think it implies that you will not, in A, you will have the 100% of county average wages. That's the full-time jobs that the enterprise zone is going to be providing, which are the long-term benefit to the county. And then if you read B, any additional requirements the sponsor may reasonably request. And then it says included but not limited to. And I think the included and not limited to says that you will, you know, you'll include these in your negotiations as prevailing wage, not limited to other items that could be anything else that the sponsor would like to negotiate. And I understand the argument of negotiable, and I do understand that, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran. However, the way it's written, I do believe it does put that on as you must negotiate this, and then any other items that you might to get the fourth and fifth year property tax exemption.
I guess that's what I'm struggling with, and I see it both ways. I mean, it's the same question I asked Mr. Shipwreck, which is, I guess I can hang my hat on that it is permissive, and so it is almost in some ways no different than state law today, other than you've put the words down on paper. So to me, I guess that in some ways helps out Mr. Shipwreck's testimony. This is a landmark. It's just putting down on paper what counties could already do today. I don't know. if you care to respond. Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. What the sponsors of this amendment have said over and over is that this gives a chance for Oregon contractors and Oregon workers to have this work. And that's what they're after. And we appreciate that. As the folks that represent the contractors are sitting in their offices, twiddling their thumbs, wishing and going after any piece of work that's out there. These are important jobs to us, too. This doesn't get us there.
But what is the...
It just doesn't. We wish it did. If this could get us there, we'd be here screaming and saying, yes, do this, please, because this will help us get back to work. But in terms of does this do anything to help Oregon jobs, to help Oregon workers? No. It doesn't. In terms of whether or not this... excuse me, sir.
Well, so you're saying that high-wage jobs don't help Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, no, not they do. Highway jobs are incredibly critical to Oregon, and those are public jobs.
Prevailing wage.
Excuse me.
Prevailing wage jobs are not good for Oregon.
That's another bill. And
Chair Deckard, Senator Corcoran, highway jobs are good for Oregon, but does this ensure that Oregon contractors and Oregon laborers are on these jobs? Absolutely not.
Because it's permissive.
Well, Senator Corcoran, it's not even if it were, respectfully, even if it were a mandate, it wouldn't guarantee Oregon workers and Oregon contractors on those jobs. It sets a wage rate. It doesn't encourage the use of Oregon contractors. It doesn't talk about the compatibility of the firm in terms of how they select their contractors. It doesn't do any of that. It just sets a wage rate to be negotiated. And from our perspective, that doesn't encourage the use of Oregon contracts or the use of Oregon labor, and that's what this bill is about. It's about economic development and about using and getting Oregonians and bringing business to Oregon. And this doesn't do that, and we wish it did. We like the bill. This amendment doesn't help it.
But how does it hurt? I mean, I guess that was my big question.
What is the big objection? I can
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I may, the whole purpose of the bill, obviously economic development, is to attract these businesses into these enterprise zones, and we believe from that this has the same effect of the last testimony, that you will deter those very businesses that we want to attract and attract those jobs, which does lead to construction, does lead to those long-term jobs, and that's what we're fearful of, Mr. Chair.
They're afraid that the county might... You know, and I understand the whole, we're weighing, looking nationally here, so
yeah.
Looking, and we look at this and we think maybe the county might just hit us with this one, or...
And the way the language is written, and as businesses decide to locate into those enterprise zones, Mr. Chair, it's a condition of to negotiate to be able to get those fourth and fifth year, and therefore there will be other attractive sites elsewhere.
Okay.
That will be more attractive, and that's what we're doing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all the work y'all have done on 2299.
Mr. Chair,
kept you busy. Yes, Senator Corcoran.
As much as I fight with AGC, I want to tell you that those nice people gave me a metal cup that plugs into my cigarette lighter that I'm scared to death of. I think they're trying to kill me.
Yes. If the microphone did not pick that up, Jessica said they are not trying to kill you.
They are trying to kill me. And they'll get prevailing wage for doing it, too.
How soon?
Okay, be nice.
Well, you offered to help?
Yeah. I'll turn the electricity on.
We'll make it permissive.
We'll make it permissive. B-19s. Avista, would you like to come and make the case on the B-19s? And if there are opponents, and I believe there are, be prepared to come up afterwards.
Mr. Chair, Jim Anderson of Avista Corporation, thank you. Just a brief history on the B-19s, if I can take you back over to the House side. With passage of B-19, what you're doing with House Bill 2299 is taking Section 34 back to where it was originally when the bill was drafted. Avista added in the House sub 34 sub D and E to the bill. B-19s will take D and E out of the bill, leave 34 B and C in the bill. That's construction in process issue. That's an issue for the future. That's an issue that isn't for the here and now. It will allow centrally assessed properties, centrally assessed companies that want to come into the state and build, centrally assessed companies that are here today and want to expand in the various counties in which they reside, the ability to do that and the ability to negotiate with the local taxing district. If you'll notice on page 27, center of the page, line 26, allows the local taxing district to opt out of this exemption. That's allowed by 34C. We request the committee to keep 34C in for the future for the state. It is an incentive for these types of facilities, such as Coyote Springs, that's located in Morrill County, to go elsewhere. Also to rebuild and build new facilities in Morrill County. You give me today a natural gas transmission pipeline and an electric transmission corridor, and we can build a power plant. If we deal with the local taxing district, get the exemption, this is a small brick in that tax wall, but if we can get that kind of exemption, it makes that property look much more attractive in that local district. This is what this is all about. This is the way it's been for years, and now we have the opportunity to do it today, and this is the proper venue to do it in, I believe.
Senator Farrell.
Mr. Chairman, I have great sympathy for the idea of removing centrally assessed utilities from the future tax roll for work in progress. I think that works as a disincentive. Here we're kind of sending mixed messages. We're doing enterprise zones. We're doing tax abatement strategies. We're trying to incentivize the construction of alternative energy devices in Oregon. And to leave the tax policy in place for centrally assessed utilities to be taxed for work in progress seems counterproductive to me. The concern that I have is that there are several jurisdictions that have a problem with 34C, and the issues seem to be different, slightly different issues. So I don't think there's opposition to the idea among counties that they should change the policy at the state level and not do work in progress assessments on centrally assessed utilities, and I think that is a major policy change and a good one. But there are other jurisdictions that are affected by the language in 34C, and Mr. Chairman, I wonder if those two issues need to be teased apart, and I know that there are folks from the counties here that want to testify on that issue.
Chair Deckard, if I could quickly make a clarifying statement.
We let Jim answer that question. Jim, did you want to respond to...
I guess I'm not surprised that the counties do have a problem with this. I mean, this has been in place for years. And as we all know in this room, and it's no surprise, utilities being centrally assessed have been viewed to be deep pockets. It's been a very good taxing mechanism for the local taxing districts and for the state. And so be it. The utilities have gone along with it. Now utilities are a little different animal. We're selling a commodity just like a loaf of bread on a Safeway shelf today. There will be people come into this state that want to build power plants, want to put in some sort of generation point that are not utilities. This might be some Wall Street firm that wants to do this. This is the kind of world we live in now in the energy issues. I saw in the paper the other day, and it struck home with this bill, centrally assessed companies aren't just utilities. In there is railroads, airlines, and I see that Marty Brantley, heading up our economic development efforts here in the state, had to go public and turn down a Boeing plant from further negotiation, which to walk away from the table with something like that seems a little tough for the state to do right now during these economic times. This is the kind of issue, again, it's a small issue, but it still is a part of the issue when you take a look at the big picture in the future. And these enterprise zones are, and the counties, the local taxing districts are going to play a big role, and we would like to be able to deal with them. And this kind of issue, if this is to pass today, would give us that tool.
Thank you.
Mr. Burton.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, I just would like to clarify one point in Mr. Anderson's testimony. I'd like to clarify one point relative to Mr. Anderson's testimony. This only applies to centrally assessed facilities in enterprise zones. It's not a blanket exemption. That's why it's in this bill and why it's specifically referred to in this part of the statute. So it's only in enterprise zone where you're trying to incent development that this applies.
And we need your name for the record. But does the department favor that approach or have no position? Or?
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department. This has been a very controversial issue, and we believe that it's come to the fore because the environment's changing. We believe that at some point there will need to be a policy decision to address that.
Do you think it's an incentive? Do you see these are tough to gauge, but you see the incentive qualities of this amendment?
Chair Deckard, I believe that on certain projects, and I would, we're going to be talking about wind generating facilities before too long. The energy market has changed. The economics has changed on that. For those to be exempted during the construction period while the facilities are not productive, are not earning an income, might be a contributor to the proliferation of wind generating facilities. And something where there's a clear profit margin, and as we discussed relative to the other bill that we heard earlier several weeks ago, a gas-fired plant, there are only so many places those can end up. There needs to be a fuel supply, there needs to be transmission, and there needs to be cooling water for those to work. I'm not sure it's as compelling an incentive in those cases as it would be in the more marginal facilities like wind. But a $100 million wind facility, which has marginal economics based on current energy prices, might be incented to move forward with something like this.
Mm-hmm. With fewer places to locate, I would. Okay. Further? Thank you very much. Do we have an opponent or two?
That's an opponent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Deisner with the League of Oregon Cities. I want to take you back to the first day of testimony that we had on this bill. I recall that staff from the Department of Economic and Community Development saying that their major agenda items with respect to House Bill 2299 had to do with their top priorities were reordering the zone statute to make it more user-friendly and to sunset or extend the sunset for the long-term rural enterprise zone. Keeping those two goals in mind, we have a real concern with including an exemption for construction in progress for centrally assessed utilities in the E-Zone bill. This whole situation with Morrow County and Boardman and Umatilla and some of the other local jurisdictions that could be affected by this has just brought to light a much larger tax policy debate within our membership. This is basically, we're concerned that there's a real difference of opinion as to what the potential revenue impact is of including this exemption in this bill. And because it is a major shift in tax policy, we would like an opportunity to discuss this separately, apart and away from the Enterprise Zone Bill, House Bill 2299. Hence, we have the Dash B12 amendments for your consideration, which would also exempt Section 34C from the bill. So if you include the Dash B12 amendment and the Dash B19 amendments, then you will have, if you will, to the extent that the other Klamath County long-term rural, yeah, that bill passes, then the Avista agreement with Morrow County can go forward. But because this is a larger issue, we would also like you to consider the Dash B12 amendments in addition to the B19s.
And are the B13s yours?
Mr. Chairman, the B-13 were a draft that I produced, which accomplishes, I believe, somewhat the same as B-12, but perhaps not as artfully as B-12. So B-12 and B-19, in effect, would be accommodations to both the VISTA and the local county jurisdictions.
Okay. The 13s aren't in play then?
Mr. Chairman, I think the B-13s may have fallen by the wayside.
Okay.
And since that was an amendment I brought, I'm happy to see that happen, Mr.
Chairman. Okay.
The other thing is I'm sensitive to the issue that was discussed here. Again, I think we really ought to take a hard look at the policy of centrally assessed utilities and work in progress. And at the present time, Mr. Chairman, this bill doesn't have a fiscal impact. I'm afraid if we took the action that's contemplated, we might have an indeterminate amount of cost shifting to counties or loss of revenue, and that might wrap the whole process around the axle, Mr. Chairman. So I don't want to see that happen.
Thank you.
So I guess I'm a little conflicted. I would like to see some action taken to relieve the centrally assessed utilities and work in progress to keep the option in the counties, and I think B-19 approaches that. If B-12 is added, I think that's a possibility to move forward as a sort of a compromise. But I do worry about the idea of creating a problem for the jurisdictions with the attempt in this bill to do the centrally assessed utility exemption for work in progress. So I guess I need to have that addressed by these folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Just a small bit of information. Remember, these agreements can be extended by these enterprise zone, program, and the length of it can be extended by agreement. So you can in effect have an extra 2 years of enterprise zone benefit without the construction in progress exemption. Our concern is that this is an issue. This is a major property tax policy issue, and to do this, make this decision this late in the session, in this context of an enterprise zone bill, we would just soon see a more careful study done. We do recognize the industry is changing, but we want to make sure that if the tax policy changes to recognize that it doesn't sweep too broadly. One other point of information, if I may, Mr. Chair, Avista testified that there's an opt-out provision. There's an opt-out provision in 34C that only applies to special districts. It does not apply to cities or counties. So another alternative may be, if you want to provide a local option, give another tool to local government when they're doing this negotiation, have the opt-out provision that applies to special districts apply to cities and counties as well.
Okay. Your position's you want the 12s, you don't want the 19s.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the 12s and the 19s would basically remove any discussion of construction in progress, as far as I know, from the bill altogether. So if you adopt both of them, that would be fine.
So 12 and Mr. Chairman, up again.
Yeah.
12 and 19?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mazin?
I think 12 is broader than 19. I mean, you could, Mr. Chair, adopt 19, but 12 would remove what you have adopted.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that if the B-12s were adopted by the bill, then sections D and E would basically be. It would not necessarily mean anything anyway. So if you adopted both, that would just give you a clean statute, as it were.
Chair Deckard, I believe that B-12 takes care of D and E also. I think B-12, if you want to take out this piece, B-12 does that.
B-12 takes out D, yes. Yeah. Mike Burton speaking. Okay.
And 19.
And the 19, which... Please, Madison.
Yeah. 19. If you do 12, you don't need 19, Mr. Chair.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
So that is my understanding, is that 12, obviously, 19 is a policy choice independent of itself.
Mm-hmm.
12 gets you everything that Senator Farrelly was mentioning in his opening.
Yeah, it does, Mr. Chairman. The issue left for resolution is whether or not Oregon should assess centrally assessed utilities for work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue, and as we heard testified, it's got the league and the counties perhaps split in their membership. And so it might be a policy question that deserves a little better study. I personally think it's an excellent policy choice, but it's a question of how much understanding there is to develop support for that policy choice.
I find myself in a pretty similar position, actually. I'm kind of intrigued. I'm not sure if you want to put it in this bill right now at this point, but I do think it's Hartman agrees with me on that. But I do think it's an interesting question. I guess we'll have other vehicles that we could entertain that in the future. Thank you. Further for the counties, Mr. Burton. Okay. Dash B20s, those are the conflicts. Dexter, you're the proponent for them. You're not here. You are here. Do you want to? You have no opponents, so you could be the only one with no opponents, too.
Sounds good. Do you want to hear from me, or they're pretty straightforward?
They're complex. Does anyone have questions for Dexter? No. Okay, Senator Starr, Dash 21s.
Dash 21s, you, Mr. Chair, is it just allows the seven largest cities in the state to enter into negotiations with OECD as it relates to the Strategic Investment Program. Many of these projects are in city limits. Clearly, obviously, within counties as well, but this would just allow an option for cities to take the lead as it relates to the strategic investment program. Clearly, when a project was not within a city limits or one of these city limits, the county then would have to obviously take care of working with OECD. I think this just, to me, it's pretty straightforward. It shouldn't be that controversial. It allows the cities to move forward. So. I'd urge support for the B21s. The seven largest cities are Portland, Salem, Eugene, Gresham, Beaverton, Hillsborough, and Medford. Those are the cities in the state that are population greater than 60,000, as reported by the current Blue Book.
Which Senator Starr has on hand, so we know it's accurate and fresh data. That sounds good. This is the first I've heard of them. Have anyone would like that has received the B21s to come up and testify, Mr. Mulvihill? And if anyone has questions for either staff or Senator Starr.
Good afternoon. Dennis Mulvihill, Washington County. Just saw him here a few minutes ago, but I believe that the Board of Commissioners of Washington County would oppose these, and I would suspect the Association of Counties would oppose them. For this reason, and that is that it would allow a city to go take the lead on an SIP program, and they would make the decision for all the rest of the taxpayers for the whole county in that decision making.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just apply just to the
inside the
municipality.
I understand exactly what you're saying. So you would have, whereas today you have at least the compilation of the commissioners from throughout the county gathering to make that decision.
Along with the city, in cooperation with the city, as the statute reads now. And that's the way we've done it before.
Okay. Thank you. Counties, anyone else? This relatively new amendment. I think what we should do, I think we'll bring this back Thursday.
Could we hold this over, Mr. Chairman?
I think
there's so many amendments floating around. I don't know.
I think I've got them straight now, but I agree to hold it. Holding over might be a good thing. Mr. Chairman, there's another amendment that's surfaced. Yes. It's B-22. I just saw a copy of it myself a moment ago.
From who?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's from some wind power folks.
Mr. Powell, is that you got the B-22s? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to do just that. We're going to hold this till Thursday. So I would ask...
December 31st.
I'm going to ask, hopefully, no more amendments. That would be really wonderful if no one else had amendments for the bill, and then we will come back, and if you're proponents of it, just have vote counts ready on Thursday, and we'll try to do this first and move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would, if at all possible, could we just take 2 minutes to hear what 22 is?
Yeah, sure. That's a good idea, so we'll be done with it. Mr. Powell, Mr. Kosasan.
Mr. Chair, Richard Kosasan, Lifeline Renewable Energy, Inc., which is a consortium of wind developers, primarily out of the state of California, and have taken a very hard look and serious look at trying to develop and site a facility in Morrow County, about 100-megawatt facility. And we are here presenting Dash 22 amendments, and they are an effort to provide some incentive at the county level for the development of wind energy.
Do you have copies? I do not have the Dash 22s. Are they going to burn our hands?
Yeah.
I've got a job for you after session.
But, Mr. Chair, the Dash 22 amendments were put together. Dexter did a yeoman's job in terms of turning these around. We received them at just about 1 o'clock today. They are, again, a very direct attempt to provide an incentive for the development of wind energy, and specifically wind energy in Morrow County. The issue arose this morning. I had the opportunity to talk to two county judges. They raised the question of previous amendments usurping, limiting county authority, and we came up then with the B-22 amendments to address those concerns. I think that's the long and short of it, and hopefully with a little bit more time and answer a couple more questions, I hope the counties
will
be supportive of these amendments.
So you've got 2 days. Mr. Powell, do you?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Powell representing Lifeline as well. Mr. Kosan, I think, has described the overall policy. If you look at the bold print on the first page, it creates a certain designation, an enterprise zone for wind turbines, which have their own unique need to be spread out. And this would allow two counties that are contiguous to one another to share this enterprise zone. However, as Richard pointed out, it would take a positive action by each of those counties, and the counties would have authority over that designation. On the second page of the bill, the amendment simply outlines the process and making sure that some of the turbines are in the enterprise zone, but allows it to be spread out in order to take advantage of the wind area.
And the counties, Mr. Chairman, are Sherman and Morrow.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ferrioli, currently the Lifeline is looking at predominantly Morrow County. There are facilities in Wasco, Sherman, Gillum, Umatilla counties.
So it could be any of the contiguous counties in next near Morrow.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, certainly.
Judge MacArthur, Judge Pryor, would you care to comment?
There are also folks here from Morrow County.
Mr. Oh, and if you'd care to bring
Morrow, Sherman, and Gillum.
Whoever. There we go. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, Chair Deckard, Mike MacArthur, Sherman County Judge. Assume we're discussing here the Dash 22 is not the substantive bill behind.
No, we're just doing the B-22s, okay. And I understand you may not have had a great chance to. I just got it myself.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We just glanced at them. We have had discussions with Mr. Kosan about their intent. I guess I'd like to step back a second and talk about what enterprise zones are all about and why we have enterprise zones and what their application may be in the wind industry, if you will. And I think enterprise zones were created to try and incent businesses to locate and to create jobs. And the wind industry creates very few jobs. So it's a bit of a stretch to start with to be using enterprise zones to site wind turbine farms or wind turbine projects. However, it's been done in Judge Pryor's County, Gillam. It was an incentive that was important incentive for location of that project. And it does bring some benefit, and eventually they'll pay property taxes. But I think the model of development we're starting to see here in Oregon is one of large developer, big project, chicken feed to the farmer or landowner, actually. The farmer may get nothing. Developers taking the profit out of state. I think a model that we ought to be considering is some way in which the people involved in the counties that live there can benefit from the revenue generated from these projects. And the problem we have, of course, is the transmission issue, which is why I was here with Senate Bill 322 a long time ago. But it takes a large-scale project in order to solve that transmission problem. Mm-hmm. We recently heard from some farmers from Minnesota who are doing this cooperatively, and the farmers are keeping the profits rather than some developer. We think that property tax is one way at least the local county can benefit. So it's ultimately important for us to have the leverage to be able to negotiate with the developer about what their property tax responsibility is going to be in the county. These kinds of projects do change the face of the county. And the developers in Sherman County, at least, have been promoting their projects as beneficial to the counties as property taxpayers, as somebody who's going to help the school district and help county government and help the local fire districts and so forth. So we think it's ultimately important that the county be able to negotiate with those developers about the terms of their property tax exemption. If Dash 22 has accomplished that and retained that autonomy for local government, then we could find them acceptable. However, it appears to me, I don't see why they're necessary at this point. There's the opportunity. All of our counties have enterprise zones now. As they did in Gillam County, they simply extend those enterprise zones to include that territory if they've reached an agreement. So, Mr. Chair, we'll be willing to continue to look at that and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Judge Pryor, or Commissioner?
Rick Griesmer, County Commissioner, Chair Deckard, Committee. I came prepared to speak in opposition to Amendment B-16, and I have only, like these people, just recently read part of 22. I'm not prepared at this time to speak any to more about that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Laura Pryor, and I'm the Gillam County Judge, and we do have some experience with wind towers in our county. I'm glad you're going to set this over and take a little longer look at it, because I think renewable energy is important. It's important to the whole country. And I think we're in the infancy in some ways, although wind power has been around for a long time. In this generation of it, this evolution of it, I think we need to take a longer look at it. I also don't exactly understand why this is necessary. We think that the basic bill was a good bill. I'm not sure what we're doing with all of these amendments, and I'm glad we're having a chance to take a longer look at it. The only comment I really want to make is I want to make sure when we're doing this that we are sure what we're doing to the land use process. There's a conditional use permit required for these facilities. I'm not exactly sure that it's clear which county would do what. If it's in a contiguous county and you have a piece of it on each side for some reason, who does the conditional use process, and do we make it even more muddled? So I think taking a longer look at this is a good idea.
Thank you. And I appreciate your comments about the less amendments, the better. I wish I was a judge and could issue that edict. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions?
Just to thank the chair for conducting what was an excellent hearing on a lot of complicated amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, so this will come back Thursday, House Bill 2299, Thursday at 1. If you have an amendment that you'd like to have included, please just get the votes together on the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I thought you just said the chair would not consider any further amendments.
Wow.
So nothing above dash 22, is that what I heard, Mr. Chairman?
No. Nothing above, that is correct. Nothing above dash 22.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Both the work session and for adjournment.